You're listening to Equipped, the podcast that turns gaming concepts into life lessons. I'm your host, Isa Gonzalez, and each week, I'll show you different ways you can clear quests, fight boss battles, and level up, not only in-game, but also in real life. What's up, you guys? Welcome back to the show. I'm really excited for this episode because we have a very special guest today. I'm happy to introduce him. He is an indie game developer. He created the games The Saga of Lucemia and another game called The Weave and the Void. But not only is he passionate about gaming, he is also an author, traveler, and founder of Stormhaven Studios and Wandering Hermits. So guys, let's welcome Tim Anderson, or better known as Renfail. Hey there, Renfail.
Hey everybody, what's up?
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited because, again, like I said earlier, you are the first game developer that is going to be on this show. And so I'm really excited to get your take and your perspective on this whole gaming thing. But before we get into that, let's sort of start at the very beginning. Like, where did your love for gaming begin?
So when I was a kid, so I'm dating myself a little bit by saying this. I'm 41 now. So I got into games in the early 90s. I could actually say late 80s, because when the Nintendo came out, my grandmother did get us one of those. And so that was kind of the introduction to everything. But I really got into it in around 90, 91. My dad had a construction company, and he got a computer, a PC, for his accounting and everything that he was doing there. And when he got that, that allowed me to start getting into the early point-and-click adventure games that came out from like Sierra and LucasArts in the late 80s, early 90s. Things like King's Quest, Quest for Glory, Space Quest, those types of games. And so that really was when it all came together, you know, late 80s getting into the Nintendo and then early 90s getting into point and click adventure games. And I was always a huge lover of fantasy and science fiction, and I used to read voraciously. And so for me, it was just a natural progression to be able to go from seeing something in my mind when I'm reading to be able to actually seeing something with my eyes and visually interact with it. It was just magic, literally just magic.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Like, what do you think is your fondest memory of gaming growing up?
Ooh, that's a hard question. There was a couple of games in particular that stand out to me. King's Quest VI and Quest for Glory I. Both of those games really did a good job of making you feel like, you know, you were the hero of the story. Like in King's Quest VI, you know, you're the prince and you're on this quest, and there's a romance interest with this princess who's locked away in a tower, and it was a very classical tale. And then with Quest for Glory, it was, oh, I can choose to be like a fighter or a mage or a thief. And both of those experiences for me, I think more sort of that was what kind of started it all for me, thinking about it in that perspective in terms of a favorite moment. That's hard to narrow down, but thinking about two favorite games that gave me that experience of being the hero of my own story, that's kind of what I would look at in terms of answering that question. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I can't really, it's hard to narrow down to like a single moment in a single game because there were so many. But yeah. I think just that feeling of being it. Feeling of being a hero, you know, in those games, which is something that helps you transcend whatever is in real life.
Yeah, that's true. Like the hero's journey, it's really evident and it really plays a big part in the overall experience that a player has. And so that's awesome. That's awesome. And we all know that you're an indie game developer, but when I was like trying to know more about you, like you've also dabbled into cooking, traveling, writing, and business. And so with all of these things going on, how have you still managed to like integrate gaming into your life? And why do you choose to do so?
For a long time, gaming was always integral because before I started traveling and everything, I had my own construction company. And so it was just a nice escape to come home after a day's work and log into a world and have that escapism to sort of, you know, release your stress and get away from it all. When I started traveling, it became a little more difficult, but having been able to, I did the digital nomad lifestyle for quite a while.
Oh, wow.
And my wife and I had a travel blog for many years, and that's how we got into doing a lot of contracts around the world and doing public speaking and stuff and working with tourism boards and the like. And having the ability to game on a PC, for example, and take those games with you on a laptop, I've always been able to have that in the background. Even though I didn't do console gaming for a long time because of the full-time travel, but you've always got the ability to have the PC with you or that laptop. And so having that has just always been sort of like this escape and this ability to balance the work-life equilibrium, which is necessary for everybody, because no matter how much you love your job, at the end of the day, everybody just sort of wants to unplug for a little bit. And different people mm-hmm. do different things, you know, reading books or watching Netflix or whatever the case may be. When I was growing up before the internet, it was always books and then getting into the early point and click games. And then once we get into international internet and having basically high speed in most major cities and being able to have that on the go, I think that always has enabled me to achieve that work-life balance, which I think is very important for everybody and is very healthy to have regardless of what your day job is. So that's always been important for me.
Wow, that's amazing. Like, I'm really glad that you've managed to balance all of that, because I can imagine that you had to go through some lifestyle changes, right? Especially when you were doing the whole traveling thing with your wife. And so I am curious about the cooking show that you have. Could you tell us more about that?
Actually, it's less of a cooking show. It's more of a, so when we were still running our travel blog full time, we used to do a lot of contracts with tourism boards. And so we would go into a country, like we went to Costa Brava for 3 months and worked with the Costa Brava Tourism Board in 2015. We were in Ireland for a month in 2017. We've done a bunch of big contracts here in Mexico. And a lot of what we worked on was gastronomy projects. So we would go in and you go do tours of restaurants or farms and doing the farm to table documentaries and stuff. And so we've always loved doing sort of food photography and stuff. And then for a long time when we were living, we used to live in Cancun, Mexico for about 8 years. And we used to have our blog there and our all of our social media. And we used to cover a lot of the restaurants. And at some point, we ended up doing a foodie's guide for Cancun. And then when we moved here to Mexico City, we always sort of on the side did some cooking stuff just for social media and stuff for our own benefit. But then one of the games that I play very regularly is Lord of the Rings Online. Mm-hmm. And we had gotten, I think this was at the end of 2020. So the end of 2020 was when I started doing the show. I haven't done an episode in a while now, which I feel kind of bad for. We did quite a few episodes in the last part of 2020 and into 2021. And basically in that game, there is a cooking and farming profession. And I was doing that with my little hobbit character, and it was getting very good traction on streams. Like Saturday mornings, I would do a, you know, Lotro and Chill stream, and I would just hang out and do farming and cooking in game. And then I started looking at all the recipes, and I was like, you know what? Chris and I cook like a lot of this stuff anyway. Like, you know, there was a scones recipe, which is basically just biscuits, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there was like soups. We do a lot of soups. And then there's a lot of bean recipes. And in Mexico, you do a lot of beans. So there was a lot of stuff that I looked at and said, we're already kind of doing that anyway. We already like to do cooking photography, and we've done it in the past for clients. Why don't we just do this for my personal YouTube channel? And so it mostly just started as a little experiment to sort of combine what I was doing on Saturday mornings for a while with the Lord of the Rings Online MMO, and then taking those recipes and transcribing them into the real life. And then that went a little step further where I started taking requests from people on Twitter. And then also started digging into the books a little bit. And then we kind of heatered off when it got hot, because no one wants to cook when it's hot outside, you know? And then Chris ended up going to her family for a while this past fall. So we haven't done an episode probably, I want to say 4 months, maybe a little bit longer. But we should be doing some more soon. But that's how that came about.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing more because I think it's so interesting. I've seen a bunch of videos of like people trying to remake the food from like anime. And so I already enjoyed those episodes or like those videos, but it was nice to see someone trying to recreate the food from a video game because I feel like not everyone notices like the food options in video games. And the reason why I found it so interesting is whenever I play like MMOs or something, I tend to spend more time crafting, harvesting, exactly, and just cooking because that's just like what I like to do. I'm less of a fighter, more of just like, you know, the gatherer, and I just enjoy doing that stuff. And that's why I was really intrigued to see that on your YouTube video. And I hope you guys get to make more because I think it's a cool concept, really. And you mentioned, you know, working and traveling with your wife already. And I know that you are working or you're trying to develop your next game alongside her and your brother. And so how does it feel to be able to share this passion of gaming with the rest of your family?
So this is that's a very good question. So my brother and I have shared this for a long time. I actually would like to take credit, I think. He's younger than me. He's what we call the accident child. I was 13 years old when he was born. So there's a bit of an age gap between us. But around he had always sort of been into gaming with his friends and everything. I bought him an Xbox, and that kind of got him into that. And then around 2010, I introduced him to Lord of the Rings Online, which then got him into MMORPG gaming. And he and I have always sort of shared that over the years. Traditionally, what we do is it just kind of depends on the schedule. But for the first few years, we just played off and on, but for the last, I'd say 6-7 years now, we just have what we call our winter gaming session. And every winter, when he starts to have more free time, because he, you know, for his day job, he has a ranch, a cattle ranch, and also an excavation company, and he does the game development at nights, you know, on the weekends and stuff. But when there's winter, you're not going outside because the ground is frozen, it's snowing, it's cold. So he always has more free time in the winter. So every winter, we usually get together and do something for 3 or 4 months. We'll pick a game and we'll play it together. It's usually an MMORPG. And a lot of the times we either go back and forth between like Star Wars Old Republic and Lord of the Rings Online, but we've also done like EverQuest 2. So I've always had that with him. Chris is a little bit different because she's not a gamer. And this new project came about when we were ending with the previous project, which is at the end of 2020 and getting into 2021. And we were looking at, well, what are we going to work on next? And he and I said, you know, we had just spent 7 years as the founders and everything else of this, of Stormhaven Studios, and being the creative director on an MMORPG and raising a bunch of money from investors and just doing that for 7 years was very rewarding, but also very exhausting, managing, you know, up to 20 people at a time with contractors and everything else. And so when we looked at what are we going to do for the next project, we said, let's just do something small that the two of us can do together. And we just said, well, why don't we do a point and click game? Like, because we liked the, I loved those growing up. He has never really gotten into them, but he liked the idea of them. He's played a few of them. And then the way Chris got involved was very natural because Joey and I were looking at it going, well, we know what we can do. But we're still going to need like a concept artist for some things. And then that got us talking about, well, if we're going to do this, what if we also do a book series? And then if we also do a tabletop, you know, series as well and combine all this stuff, we're going to need an artist to create art for all that. And Chris and I have been together for more than a decade, and she has always enjoyed art as a hobby. So she does it, like if I took you through a tour of her house, everything here, there's all this handmade stuff that she'll do, like little clay pottery stuff. And then like in the bathroom, for example, we have a bunch of hand knitted or hand sewn like hanging racks for like toilet paper. So you could put six rolls of toilet paper in this thing that hangs on the wall. And that's, she sewed that by hand. And she's got all these sketches that she was doing in a sketchbook. And like my mom got her a big portable painting kit. So she's always had that, like, I like to draw and do artsy craftsy stuff. And so I just told her, I said, well, what do you think about maybe doing art for this project? And she was like, oh, I'd love to do that. And so that was just kind of how that started. And then she has become sort of within our own community, Because Chris is very private. She's not like me. Like, if I get her on social media, she'll do stuff with me, but I'm always the leader when it comes to filming the episodes and doing anything else. But she's always loves to participate. It's just she won't do it on her own. So getting her into our community, as the community has grown over the last year plus now, well, I guess not quite a year, but the community has begun to make her feel more comfortable. And so she actually started gaming with me on Saturday mornings, doing her first MMORPG experience in EverQuest 2. And it's been a very interesting experience for her because the community has been so supportive of her. It's made her want to play more now. And she's like, can we do 2 streams a week? And I was like, absolutely. I'm happy to play as much as you want. So it was funny for me because gaming has always been my thing that I did, and she's just always been happy to support me in my creative endeavors. And then when she got involved in it, it started off as just being the person doing concept art. But then it was like, oh, well, now I'm watching you play this game, and that looks like really cool, a cool screenshot that we could take for a concept image. And then that sort of gradually rolled into her watching me play. I think the first game she actually tried with me was Red Dead Online, because she was watching me play a lot of Red Dead, and she was like, oh, that looks so cool, like I would love to like ride around on a horse. And so she tried that a little bit, and yeah, that's kind of how that all came about. So it ultimately, that's the long way to answer your question, which is, it is very rewarding to do something with your significant others and loved ones, brother, family, wife, whatever, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, all that stuff. I've always said, and every time I do a presentation, I always tell people, it's enjoyable to see the sunset by yourself, but it's infinitely more enjoyable when you can share a sunset with someone who means something to you, because in that shared experience, there is a shared appreciation for what's happening. And that's something that enhances whatever that activity is. And so it's I'm very blessed to be in a position where my significant other and my, you know, brother are both enjoying something that I enjoy doing as well.
Beautiful.
And sorry, that's a long version.
No, it was a great story. I love to hear about it, because it's true. It's nice to be able to enjoy things on your own. That's definitely not a bad thing to be able to do, but it really means so much more when you get to share that with other people. And like, I think you're pretty lucky that you get to, you know, combine so many different aspects of your life, and it seems to be working out pretty well. But now I'm curious, like, you've been working with your brother for over 7 years, and now that you've been working with your wife as well, have you guys experienced like any challenges working together? Because I've also heard a lot of people say that sometimes they don't like it when they're working with a friend or they're working with family, because it sort of mixes everything up and there's like not that many clear boundaries. So how has this experience, you know, been for you?
So I can answer that one pretty candidly. So my brother and I have a very good working relationship because we get along very well. I don't think we've ever had any issues in like 7+ years. Chris and I, that's a little different, because the husband wife dynamic is a lot different than the brother dynamic. So I'm sure anybody who's been in a long-term relationship will relate to this. You're always going to have friction points on certain things, because in our case, a better way to put this into context is we both work from home. And so we're together all the time. Now, thankfully, we love each other and we have a lot of fun together, but people also still need their personal space. And we've technically worked together now, not just on this part, because we had the travel blog together and we used to do a lot of stuff, but she would sometimes have part-time jobs. And then we had an Airbnb together for 3 years in Cancun. So we've done a lot of things together, she and I. And for the most part, I would say it works pretty good. Like 85% of the time, it's perfect. There's always going to be that 15% or so, however, when couples do as couples do, and maybe you're having a bad day and your tone of voice isn't quite right, and you don't say something the right way. And then there's this moment of, you know, I don't want to talk to you for 2 hours. Just leave me alone and let me do my thing. So I think that's the candid answer to that, is that from a husband and wife perspective, but I think that's a fair assessment of it, in the sense that for the most part, it's pretty good, but there's always going to be those days where sometimes it's just like, you know what, I need some me time. Just leave me alone for a little bit and I'll go off and you know, it, whether it's me or her, I'm using that as a, you know, the, I need more time. It happens to both of us sometimes. And I think that's just a natural part of any long-term relationship. So it works pretty good, but there are days when it's challenging. But also because we're not, you know, we're not doing this in a, how do I look at it this way? The previous project we worked on with the MMORPG, with the Saga of Lucemia, that was a little different because, at least for my brothers and I perspective, we had investors and we also had a huge pre-order community and everything else. So there's a lot of expectations from outside sources about needing to hit certain deadlines, and that adds pressure. But with what we're doing right now with the Weave in the Void, since we're doing it all on our own, and we're doing it through Patreon and everything else, there's not that same level of pressure. So it's very much something mm-hmm. where we do have objectives and we do have goals that we set. And we hit those goals religiously because it's very important to have deadlines, even if it's just something that you're working on, you know, outside of your day job. But there's not that same level of pressure because we don't have the expectation that we have somebody looking over our shoulder and telling us, hey, you have to hit this deadline. We obviously do have patrons and supporters on Twitch and so on and so forth. And it's important to make sure you hit goals for those people because they are supporting you. But it's not quite the same as having investors per se, where there's actually, I'm going to say this in a hopefully a way that makes sense. There's not the same legal responsibilities when you're doing something on your own and or through Patreon, as opposed to having investors where there's paperwork and, you know, consequences for doing things. And that does change the dynamic a little bit, and it helps so that when we're working together, it's very casual. And I don't think there's only been a couple of times when it's like we're really trying hard because we have some internal goals that we're trying to hit. For example, we wanted to get a demo. We wanted to get our demo out by the end of October last year. And I know from my brother's perspective, he had to do some scheduling adjustment, which stressed him out a little bit. I think I can say that without him getting upset about it, because he had to shift some of his responsibilities with the ranch because we really needed, and it wasn't because we had to, it was because we really wanted to, from an internal perspective. But for the most part, yeah, smooth sailing.
That's awesome. Like, again, I guess it's just, you know, finding that balance between all the different aspects that you know, are revolving within your life. And I'm really happy to hear that so far it's been really good. Like, even though there are those days where it's a bit rough than usual, at the end of the day, or at least zooming out, everything is still pretty, pretty great.
Perspective is key, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Perspective is key. And you already mentioned, you briefly mentioned the Saga of Lucemia. And for our listeners, this is also a book, right? This is something that you wrote. And I'm really curious because you have decided to turn it into an actual video game as well. And so is there a difference in terms of like your creative juices flowing between writing a book and trying to turn that book and bring it into life?
I don't think the creative juices are any different, but it is a different dynamic in terms of how you go about doing that. So when you're writing a book, it's very much a solo endeavor when you're doing the writing process, because for the most part, it's not like that in every project, and I can talk about that briefly. For example, the project that we're working on now with The Weave in the Void, my brother and I worked together to come up with the story and the world and the lore, but I'm the one who's solely responsible for writing the actual book because that's mm-hmm. my area of expertise. Now, with the Saga of Lucemia, that started off in the late 90s as a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, second edition AD&D. I was living with my high school buddies. We'd all got out of high school. They were going to college. I was working with my uncle, and we would just play lots of D&D. So I created this world for us to play in, and that was the Saga of Lucemia. And then that went from a D&D campaign in the like 99 to a play by post. I don't know if you know what those are, but there used to be these things, where you would have these role play communities on the internet who would have a world, and they would have a forum associated with them, and everybody would have characters, and there would be like someone who would sort of watch over the forums and make sure that people were role playing properly. But mostly it would be like, I'm role playing this character, you're role playing that character, and we're role playing back and forth in a thread on a set of forums, and then other people might get involved. And so Saga of Lazimi became a play-by-post game at that point for a couple of years. And then when I moved to Bulgaria in January of 2008, I was in a place in my life where I had shut down my construction company, sold all my tools, shut down my company and everything. And I was like, I might as well just try to pursue writing because it was something I'd always wanted to do. And since I already had that world prepared, the first short story that I ever wrote professionally, we were on a ski trip in Bansko in the mountains, in the Rhodope Mountains of Bulgaria. And I sat down and instead of going skiing with the family, this is with my ex-partner, I stayed back in the hotel room and I banged out this short story over like 5 days. The first place I sent it to bought it. And I was like, oh, I'm here. Like, this is what I was meant to do. Like, you know, I always wanted to write. First thing I wrote, first place I sent, purchased it, et cetera. But that process of building Saga of Lucemia as a book was very much just me. Now, when I decided to turn it into an MMORPG, that was early 2014. And I had been involved with a project called Pantheon, Rise of the Fallen. I was their first community manager right as they were coming out of their Kickstarter. And for various reasons, I, along with everyone else who was a part of that early team, we all left the project because of something that the creative director did at the time. And people don't have to listen to it. They can go dig it up. But the whole team left, and I left with them. But while I was there, it had opened up my eyes to what was possible with using the Unity engine, which at the time was the most readily available engine for independent developers because there were no upfront costs, and Unreal at the time still required a licensing fee. And so I kind of looked at that and said, hey, we could totally make a video game. I've already got the world and everything else set up. Let's do this. And that's how that project got off the ground and Stormhaven Studios was founded. But the dynamic, the creative sort of the way the creative aspect of that works when you're working on a video game project, even though the creative sort of creative process is somewhat the same, there's a lot that's different because now you have to start breaking things down into what is or isn't possible because of programming limitations and what isn't possible based on the size of your team, the amount of funding you have, the skill set that everyone has. So you start to have to decide what's really important for the project. And also not everything that's on paper is going to be a game setting. Because such aren't going to work from a mechanics standpoint, figuring out what is or isn't going to work, creating that master design document, and then analyzing what your team can do and can't do, and then figuring out what are the things you might need to cut to make that adaptation work, which I think is another way to look at that is look at any book series, like, for example, The Witcher, which is, you know, globally popular, or the recent Wheel of Time show. Those are adaptations of books, and you can't include everything from a book in a show because there's just not enough space and time allotments. So you have to cut corners and make creative decisions to change certain things. And that's absolutely a part of taking an existing literary property and making that into a video game project is you have to be willing to sacrifice some of your children, if that makes sense. because not all of them are going to make it.
To sacrifice our children. I get it. And yeah, there is a lot to, there's like a lot more to consider, or there are a lot more factors to take in when you're trying to develop a video game. And since we're already on that topic, you mentioned that there are creative decisions that have to be made. And so for you, as your time as an indie game developer, what for you are sort of like the factors that make a good video game?
I don't want to say the generic. It's the generic answer is whatever makes it fun, but that's a very broad and generic answer. So for me, I think we talk about this a lot on the podcast that I'm a part of on Thursdays, the Looking for More show. Mm-hmm. Something that binds the three of us together, myself, Simurgh, and Nathan Napalm, is our passion for story in games. So one of the first things that we look at is always going to be, is the story good? Is the story going to pull me in? Is it going to immerse me in the game? Because if a game is nothing more than UI elements or a cash shop, then you're really just dealing with a glorified chat box, you know, or chat sim. And that's hard to have connections to that. Something that I've known for years, and I know this is kind of on the show list, I think, to talk about a little bit maybe later on, and I might sneak it in here, which is one of the reasons I've always enjoyed MMORPGs so much over the years, is because when you get into the aspect of playing together in a group and having a good story that pulls you in, it's about what makes a good adventure. And when I look at games, I wrote a blog post many years ago now for game dev, and it was titled, What Makes an Epic Story? And I looked at the Lord of the Rings novels as an example, and I said, here's a story where you've got solo content, you've got Gandalf going off to Minas Tirith and doing research, you've got small group content with like a duo or a trio, you've got Sam and Frodo off doing this, you've got Gimli, Legolas, and Aragorn running off and doing this, then you have group-based content like the Mines of Moria, where they're all in the mines together as a big group, and then you have raid content, which is large, you know, lots of people coming together, and that's like the battle in Pelennor Fields in front of Minas Tirith, you know. And so if you combine all of that together, that makes good story. The other thing is this: epic stories are what draw people in. So the example I've always used for years is, no one cares about Thor going to the grocery store to buy a roll of toilet paper or a gallon of milk. We want to know about Thor having to team up with the Avengers and take on Thanos. Like, that is an epic story, and that's what makes a spectacle, and that's what makes it interesting and pulls us in, because it's an epic story that requires multiple heroes coming together to overcome odds that are too great for one person to do on their own. So for me, when I boil it all down to what makes a good game, it's always going to come back to story. And is that story something that is entertaining and is portraying, you know, overwhelming odds that players and or individuals have to overcome through gameplay? And et cetera. Beyond that, it's all just icing on the cake. Like, you know, having a good UI is great, but at the same time, if the story isn't there, no one's going to care if the UI is good, if there's nothing there to keep them playing the game.
Right, right. I totally agree. I am a lover of stories. I don't know if that sounds right. I enjoy storytelling from like more on a marketing side, because that's what I do for work. And so I had to learn like the importance of true storytelling and why it matters to allow people to form these connections. And then I think I agree that when it comes to video games, I also have played a bunch of games that didn't really make sense to me. Like, I was just doing some random stuff, but I always ask myself, like, wait, why is this character here? Like, why? What's my backstory? Like, why am I on this planet? Like, why am I making all these like equipment if I don't even know what's going on? And that has been a factor, or that has been a reason why I decided to stop playing some games. And since you already mentioned MMORPGs, I want to reference New World, because I know that you played it before. I saw your review video on that, and I want to let you know that I have also played that game. I share the same sentiments because I think I reached level 45 and I was really looking forward to that game. Like, I only started appreciating MMORPGs in 2021, because before I would find them really intimidating. I don't know why. I think it's just that idea that I'm going to play with a lot of better players and I might just be, you know, someone that might drag them down or someone that might slow things for them. But in 2021, I think it was in August or something, I just really started to appreciate being able to play with people, or like that feeling of collaboration. And so my eyes started opening up. And then when it came to New World, though, I was really disappointed. I loved, like, I agree with what you said in the video. Like, I loved the sound design. I loved harvesting. I loved chopping down wood and mining in that game because it felt so real. But
then, very satisfying.
Yeah, it was very satisfying. But then, like, what happened, though? The game just didn't, there was a lot of bugs. There were a lot of things that, you know, the devs didn't get to fix right away, or at least they didn't prioritize it. And I can't remember the exact quest. I just remember the feeling. There was like this guy that you had to go to on this bridge, or like he was on like a wooden village, something like that. And he would make you do these quests that were so freaking far away and that were in different cities. And I was just like, I was getting tired every single quest. And so when I watched your review video, I was like, yeah, this is exactly why I ended up, you know, not playing also. And I guess my next question for you is, why do you think there are still games out there that seem to not prioritize storytelling, or like they still love to include these fetch quests? They still love to have all these side quests that don't really add to the story, but they keep throwing a bunch of them in. Like, is there something that goes deeper in like the decision making, like around that? Because there might be a lot of things that aren't evident for the players, but since you're a game developer, like, could you shed more light on that?
Absolutely. So I'm glad you mentioned earlier that you do marketing for your day job. So I also do marketing for my day job and have been doing it for many years. So there is a marketing reason for this, as well as a simple game development reason. So these kind of tie in together. So fetch quests are really easy to implement because they don't require a lot of overhead in terms of writers. And that means fewer man hours. It's fewer man hours to design a fetch quest because you can just literally take a template and copy and paste it. It's like, okay, kill 10 bears, kill 10 bears, kill 10 boars, kill 10 deer, kill 10 wolves, kill 10 bats, repeat that process, insert name of monster here. And you don't have to create any sort of original storyline for those things. It literally is just, here's an NPC with a stupid quest, do it. And then you tie a piece of loot to it. So that ties into the dopamine hit that we know from marketing is a very important aspect of getting people to play the game and to stay logged into the game for longer periods of time because they're constantly getting a dopamine hit. So from a marketing standpoint, that's the part of it that ties into it, because everything you're doing from, and this is more towards MMORPGs than it is to single player games. Mm-hmm. But specifically with MMORPGs, everything you're doing is trying to keep people logged into that game for as long as possible. It doesn't matter if it's a free to play game or a subscription based game. It does not matter, because your entire objective is the more people who are playing the game, the more social that game is, the more people have opportunities to see other people and group up with other people and communicate with other people. And so they'll stay logged in for longer. So fetch quests are an easy way to provide players with breadcrumbs in terms of leading them from one objective to the next in between the main quest line. Is it the best way to do things? I don't necessarily think it is, but it's the exact same system that you see in serialized television shows that have like 20 or 24 episodes, because you'll really only have 7 or 8 episodes out of that entire season that have a main story that is connecting all of them. And in between those, you have what are known as filler episodes or episodes of the week. You can go back as far as like looking at the original X-Files show, you know, it was monster of the week episodes. And then there might be 2 episodes back to back that tell a storyline. And then 6 or 7 episodes later, they do another 2 episodes that tie back into that one. And over the course of the season, they have these interconnecting storylines. But in between there, they have all the filler. And so that's what fetch quests are. It's filler content that doesn't take a lot of time to design. Therefore, it doesn't cost a lot of money, but it's very effective in terms of keeping players logged on, because it allows them a quick dopamine hit, because it gives them a quick piece of gear, the satisfaction of having completed something and feeling like they're moving forward in terms of progressing their character. So that's an easy one to answer.
Wow. It all makes sense now. I'm just in awe, because I never considered, like, thinking about the series and stuff, I never realized that they sort of do the same thing. And yeah, marketing does play a huge role in this. And I'm just amazed, because now I feel like I get a better understanding of why certain games or certain game developers make the decisions that they do make. And I don't know, I think it's something worth talking about too, because I hear so many people, like, with YouTube, with Facebook, with Twitch, a lot of people review these games, right? And everyone deserves to share their opinions and to share what they didn't enjoy or what they did enjoy. But I think it's always worth trying to dig deeper and really figuring out why this happens, you know? And it won't necessarily make anyone's opinions change, but at least it sort of widens their understanding of what goes on behind a game. And I just think that it's so interesting that you got to share about that today. So really, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, sure.
I have to reconsider now, like, how I feel about the other games that I've been playing.
Well, I could tell you one thing from my own personal perspective, and I don't know how deep you dug into my YouTube in the limited amount of time leading up to this, but I did an episode for Mondays and MMORPGs probably 4 years ago. I think it was the very first episode of the show I did, called Milk Runs, Why I Hate Milk Runs. And I was talking about fetch quests, but I was using the milk run example from Thor going to get a gallon of milk. It's like, it's really annoying when I log into a game and the first thing they're asking me to do is do all these stupid quests where it's like the NPC is just too lazy to go do them. And he just wants me to go run his errands and do his grocery shopping. It's like, that's just ridiculous. Give me a story. Like, not, and you know, depending on the type of game you're playing, it can be something epic or not, but just, I need a reason for my character to exist in that world.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And exactly. A mission for that person, a reason for existing beyond simply running errands for someone else. So I love, here's a good example. It's a single player game, but the most recent God of War that came out a couple years ago is just, I think, a shining example of really good storytelling, and it doesn't utilize fetch quests. Every quest line in that game is a, you know, 5 to 10 hour experience that takes you off into a section of the world that's completely amazing, beautiful, unexplored. And then looking at a game like Red Dead Redemption 2, that's another good game that has lots of good storytelling with a handful of fetch quests, but they are done in a way that still manages to make you feel unique and special until you've done 5 or 6 of them. Then it's like, you know what? I'm just not going to do those anymore.
You're not going to do it.
Yeah. I could talk about it for hours because I have a deep-rooted hatred of fetch quests. I really don't like them. And that's one of the reasons, as an example, I never got into World of Warcraft that much, because they rely heavily on quest hubs with fetch quests. And it drives me nuts, because it's like, I just don't want to kill another 10 of something for some lazy NPC. Please don't make me do that. Please, please, please.
Yeah, like I sort of get those people that do, because like you said earlier, there's sort of like that dopamine hit when you feel like you accomplish something or just see that little banner light up and say quest completed or side quest completed. But yeah, it's sort of just knowing when it's too much and it's just unnecessary. I think that's another good point to consider. And since we've already dabbled a bit into MMORPGs, and you have Monday in MMORPGs, that's something that he has on his YouTube channel. And if you say that one of the best things or something that makes a good game is storytelling, and you also equally enjoy MMORPGs, what do you say when, like, someone can argue that for MMORPGs, like, there's just so much grind and a lot of people feel like it's just hours and hours of trying to complete or trying to gather resources to make one item, and at the end of the day, it's not even, like, the complete end yet. Like, there's still so much to do. So, considering that, why do you think MMORPGs is still something that you very much enjoy?
Man, that is a multi. Okay, I got. There's a lot of components to unpack.
Question,
yeah, there's a lot of things I have to unpack in that question. So I do actually want to jump backwards really quick, because you said something earlier about you found it difficult to get into MMORPGs. Overwhelming. I don't remember exactly the word you used.
Yeah. Intimidating.
Intimidating. That's a good word. And I think the grind is one of those. I think another one. I actually just did a YouTube episode on this a day or two ago, because I found an article on PC Gamer that just hit me, and I was like, oh my god, that's so true. And they were talking about how it's really overwhelming to get into an MMORPG that's been out for a long time, or a game series like The Elder Scrolls was the example they used, because you're going into a world or a game that's existed for so long, And there's other people who have played it for a lot longer than you have, and they know every last little detail. And that can be challenging to try to get caught up on or try to research and everything else. So for older games, there's that component. For newer games, what you just mentioned in terms of, oh, I'm going to have to grind, I'm going to have to do this, that can be a challenging a component to overcome. But I will say this, a lot of that is just going to depend on finding an MMORPG that resonates with you. I don't like all MMORPGs. I like a select handful, and I don't like everything about them. There are things I like and things I don't like, and I very much play MMORPGs in a cyclical nature these days. Well, I'll go in and play something for 3 or 4 months, and I have a handful of games that are in my library, like Lord of the Rings Online, Star Wars The Old Republic, EverQuest 2. Those are like the three big ones. Occasionally, I'll tap into Elder Scrolls Online, and if I'm feeling nostalgic, I'll go back to EverQuest 1 once in a while. But the big two are Lord of the Rings Online and Star Wars The Old Republic. And the reason that I find these games, I'm going to use these as really good examples, is because these games are heavily story-based. So even though there is still that sort of every MMORPG is going to have that, and I'm going to use air quotes here, the quote-unquote grind, that grind isn't noticeable if you're enjoying the type of content that it's associated with. Now, the grind is different in every game. Some games, it's a gear grind. Other games, it's a quest grind. Other games, it's a level grind. It's going to be slightly different in every game. But as long as there's some core component of that game that resonates with you, you're not going to notice the grind, and it's not going to matter because you're having fun. It's even better if you're doing it with other people, which is why I'm a big fan of games that still have group-based gameplay. New World is a bad example because New World, at least in the PvE version, in the PvE environment, there wasn't a need for groups except for the dungeons.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanted to do PvP, sure, there's always going to be the need for groups. But I like to always go back to a game like, obviously these games are a lot different these days because they've transitioned to free-to-play and they've changed a lot of things. When they first launched, Lord of the Rings Online and Star Wars The Republic, as well as EverQuest 2, were both games that required you to have a group to do content. Now, that sounds crazy, like in today's day and age of group finders and matchmakers where you don't look for a group until you need a group. But one of the things that's missing from modern games is that community aspect. I mention this because I want to give an example of this. Recently, this was around Thanksgiving, so late November, I decided that I was going to go back and play EverQuest 2 for the first time in about 3 years. And so I started making videos on my YouTube channel, and I just planned for it to be me. And then I happened to stream a session the morning before Thanksgiving, and I had some of our community members, people we play D&D with, popped in and were like, hey, you're playing EverQuest 2? Man, I'm going to go install this. This I haven't played this in years. You know, they have a free-to-play option now. I totally want to do this. And then that sort of just catapulted. And we went from it just being, you know, a handful of us to now, I think we have 80 people. We have a guild meeting tonight. We're getting ready to go into a specific expansion of content that's an old expansion, but we're going to go back and re-experience it as a group, as a community. And we're, you know, planning our sessions out. We're going to be playing, you know, we've been playing Thursday nights, Friday nights, and Saturday nights. And I'm streaming those sessions, and we have people from the guild who are in the groups. And if they're not in the groups, they're watching the stream and they're hanging out in Discord. And this is what I was talking about earlier. This is what has my wife initially was just going to play it because she saw me having fun. And she's like, I'd like to try that. It looks pretty. It looks cool. I could get some concept art for it. And she logs in, we stream a session, and suddenly like the guild is coming together and people are sending her gear and they're sending her, you know, armor and weapons, and they're on stream cheering her on because she's a complete newbie to the game, and they're like, yeah, go here, do this. And that got her like, maybe I should play more than once a week. And I was like, hell yeah. The community aspect of MMORPGs can usually overcome any sort of weak spots that game might have, and it can eliminate the grind altogether because you're having fun with your friends. And so it doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter if you're doing a dungeon, on a raid, doing quests, crafting, harvesting, you're doing something together. And that community aspect is one of the key components of MMORPGs, I think, that has kind of been lost in the modern era. So if you can find a good guild and a good gaming community, it's night and day, because it can keep you playing a game long after you might have quit if you were only playing it by yourself, because you're having so much fun with the other people that it becomes more about the friendships in the community than it does about that specific game. And then that's something that just that can transcend the game, and you can go game to game to game and still have that internal community and go from there.
Wow. Like, I feel like just listening to you talk, like, I can relate so much, because I feel like it's something that I've been feeling, but until you just said it right now, I haven't really been that aware of it. And so I feel like I've just unlocked this entire different understanding of gaming and MMORPGs altogether.
That's awesome. I have a question I want to ask you too, real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is important, I think. Have you ever played, like, have you ever done any tabletop, Dungeons and Dragons, anything like that?
No, I haven't yet. Okay. I've heard of people that enjoy it, but, like, I just don't know anyone.
Sure. Yeah, that is always a big challenge. Yeah. The reason I ask this is because one of the most important components of, like, tabletop is getting together with your friends. And obviously in times of COVID, most people are playing remote these days, but back mm-hmm. in the day, it was always about, you know, getting six or eight of your friends together and, like, getting together on a Saturday afternoon around a coffee table in your basement. You know, everybody's hanging out, drinking soda and eating chips and junk food. And just for like 6 hours, you're just having, and it's so much about that group experience. And going back to the sharing the sunset with someone else, that is a core component of any type of gaming. So I always love to look at MMORPGs. I wanted to ask about the tabletop experience, because that's something that, you know, the tabletop experience replicates as well in terms of gaming, is that, you know, coming together with your friends and having a shared experience that's a lot of fun for people.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned about, you know, if you're able to find that group or that community inside a game, and that's just really something that gets you to keep playing it for who knows how long, it really becomes about the people that you play with rather than the game itself. And I think that's actually a pretty amazing thing to happen. Like you said, there's a chance that it transcends the game. It's something that the game didn't necessarily, it might have been something that they didn't intend on happening, but it did. And just the thought of that happening, that sounds so amazing. Because, like, right now, I think I used to play with my college friends, but it was for Minecraft. And so obviously, like, a sandbox game, it's normal to have, like, multiple people there and you just build stuff. But then in terms of MMORPGs, I have been only playing with my boyfriend and his brother. And it's still been really great, though. Like, I've enjoyed the process of just being able to hang out with them. And that's why I'm just, like, so amazed, because the way that you worded it out, it just makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. Like, there is a reason why people still continue to play these games, or for whatever game it is that you enjoy playing.
It's also, I think, if you look at the evolution of the evolution of gaming as a whole, when we first started with, like, the original Nintendo, everything was single player, right? But then mm-hmm. when we got to the internet, it was like, oh, well, now we could do co-op, right? Mm-hmm. And then, well, not just with the internet, excuse me, but then we went from single player to co-op, and then from co-op to the internet and doing multiplayer. And then we went from multiplayer to massively multiplayer. And we've seen the evolution of even consoles now. Most games that come out have some form of online component.
Yeah, it might be a little different.
It might be a little different depending on the game, but as an example, like right now, I just finished Halo Infinite, which has its whole, you know, I played the single player campaign, but it has its own PvP multiplayer component. Then there's I'm just now playing I'm probably 12-15 hours in at this point, Marvel's Avengers, which I'm a little late to that game because it came out like a year or so ago. But with that being part of Xbox Games Pass, I was like, I'll give it a shot. And that's another game where, yes, there's a single player campaign, but there's also co-op. So you can have your friends join you, whether it's local or remote. And then you also have the multiplayer component where you can group up with many other people to do these other missions. A lot of games have that these days where it's just, we've seen the evolution of the industry.
Options.
Right. Trying to give lots of people. And I always look at I mean, virtual reality is obviously the goal that everyone's pushing towards, but I think multiplayer is probably the end all future of most games is will end up in 20, 30 years or something, where every single game that releases is, it will be a multiplayer world experience as opposed to a single player linear track that you play by yourself, just because it's, it does add enjoyment, but also because it's a lot easier to monetize. And that's the nefarious side of things, but it's truth, is that it's a lot easier to monetize a multiplayer game than it is a single player game because of all of the different cash points that you have access to, whether it's cash shop with cosmetic items or, you know, extra character slots, all the perks, all these different things that you can buy into, XP pots, things of that nature, which allows for monetization, which from a company standpoint makes multiplayer games more of a safe bet than developing a single player title.
That does make sense, though, like especially when you mentioned about like VR, there are a lot of, you know, things that are already headed that way or towards augmented reality. And it's just crazy to be able to see how things are evolving right before our eyes. It's nice. It's sort of exciting. Sometimes it can be scary, but, you know, change is change and it's always going to be there. And before we, you know, we wrap things up, I am curious, what is your favorite MMORPG to date?
I think I always have to come back to Lord of the Rings Online. I don't play it full time. It is one of the ones that I come back to every year. I'll usually play it about 3 months out of the year, sometimes as long as 6 months. But I have such a love for the Tolkien universe. Before that game ever came into existence, it made it a very easy game to like. And also, I think it's one of the best developed MMORPGs out there. Now, obviously, it has its flaws when they transfer to a cash shop. There's a lot of issues with, you know, sort of, you know, they nickel and dime people on some things. But if you have a monthly subscription, it is one of the best all around immersive experiences you can get. I think it has hands down the best writing you will ever find in an MMORPG ever. Like if you like to read, that's a game for players who love to read because it is walls of text. Every time you meet an NPC, it's very Tolkien-ish. You're getting immersed in Middle Earth. All of the races have very distinct backgrounds and starting areas. The Shire in particular, I mean, there's a lot of love given to hobbits and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that's definitely my favorite. I always come back to Lord of the Rings Online for me is like, that's my favorite that it's a go-to that I can always come back to and know that I'm going to have a satisfying experience. And it's funny because I've played it since it launched and I still have never gotten past Rohan. So I've never gotten to Gondor. I've never gotten the ring to Mordor. Like I pitter patter around. I do a lot of role play and, you know, it's just a fun game to immerse yourself in. And it's held up over the years visually too. Maybe not the character models, but the world environment is just breathtaking. And you definitely feel like you're in Middle Earth, which is really cool.
That's awesome. Awesome. If you guys have time, check that game out. And is there any like specific lesson that you think you've gotten from playing Lord of the Rings Online?
Not necessarily Lord of the Rings Online, but I can say something that I can apply because your show does revolve a little bit around real life. I think that there is one of the most important components of MMORPGs. I'm going to do two different game styles here. One important aspect of MMORPGs in general is it teaches teamwork and learning how to work and play well with others, which is something we're all taught in grade school. You know, share your toys. Don't get, yeah, you know, don't get put in timeout, you know, don't be a bully, share your toys. That's an important aspect of online games and multiplayer games. I think from single player games, well, that's a harder question to answer. I don't really have a good answer for that one. I thought I did, and it kind of left me. So yeah, I'll just stick with the MMORPG answer for now.
No problem. Let me know if you think of any single player games that you think have taught you something valuable, because I don't know, it's just, again, really amazing. Yeah,
I guess there's puzzle solving. I was thinking, you know, there's creative thinking and creative problem solving would be something that I think all games allow people. It was very interesting to me. My dad was diagnosed with West Nile many years ago, which is a mosquito based virus, and one of the recovery methods that his doctor suggested was because he got encephalitis of the brain because of that, and so he was having some motor function issues. And the doctor suggested playing video games to get his motor function back because it challenges the brain and the hand-eye coordination. And I'll never forget it because he hated, you know, he didn't like video games. And despite the fact that we all played them and stuff, it was never his thing. But I think that creative problem solving is a good takeaway from almost every game, not just multiplayers. The single player games where it's just a storyline where you're moving forward, you're not going to take away a lot from that. It's just going to be an entertainment experience. So it's like a binge watch of a good show. It's a popcorn film. You know, it's not something you're going to get something out of. But puzzle based games can actually, there's a lot to be said for cognitive exercise in that regards.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, you guys. And so thank you so much, Renfield, for enlightening us with so many aspects of gaming and helping us understand how these games really work. I feel like I've learned so much, and I feel like I'm just now excited to start noticing more, like in the games that I do play right now. And so before we head off, I do like to, you know, encourage the listeners to reflect. And so considering everything that we've talked about today, what is a question that you would want the listeners to ponder on throughout this entire week?
I go back to the work-life balance thing. Finding a source of entertainment, it's not a bad thing to have a place to escape. It can be a book, it can be a show, it can be painting, it can be playing music. When you're looking for a good game that can provide you with a sense of escapism and help you, you know, kind of recharge your batteries, think about the storytelling that goes into these projects and how that storytelling can reflect on you and what you're going through in life. Because there's a lot of parallels that people put into video games that a lot of people don't necessarily see because they're just on autopilot, just like going through a quest line. But it's like, if you actually stop and listen to the storyline, we'll see storylines about racial injustice. We'll see storylines about same-sex relations. We'll see storylines about loss in family and love and relationships. So pay attention to storylines. I think that's a good thing to ponder for the week and how those might apply to your life and the real world around you.
So there you guys go. Pay attention to the storylines and really reflect on, you know, the things that you're seeing, the things that you're participating in, because it just adds to, like, that awareness can add to your daily existence. And so thank you so much, Renfield. If you guys want to hear more from Renfield, make sure to leave all the links to his social media in the description box below. He has a ton of YouTube content, so feel free to show him some love over there. And if you guys want to support his game that he's currently developing, check out his Patreon link. It's also in the description box. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow, rate, or review the podcast. It really means a lot to us. And if you guys don't know this yet, I think I've mentioned this for the past couple of weeks already, but I'm gonna mention it again. We have a Discord server, and so if you guys want to meet more people that love gaming and personal development, head on over to the server. I'll leave the link in the description box below as well. And there you go, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week ahead. And as always, stay safe, stay healthy, but also stay equipped.